Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack. Welcome to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I am your host, Carol Ann Tack, and once again, I thank all of you for joining me. Holy cow, listeners, I am so excited about today's guest. Today's guest first appeared on the show for episode 32 back in 2019 for her absolutely amazing debut of short stories. That book was called Salt Slow, and I did lose my mind over the book. I am not going to lie. And that author is back with her debut novel, Our Wives Under the Sea. And that author is the one and only Julia Armfield. And Julia, I cannot thank you enough so much for joining me and the listeners of Merrick Library's Top Shelf podcast.
I can't thank you enough. It's so special to be back on a podcast that champions authors so much. It's just amazing.
I am so appreciative for those kind words, and I really am very happy to see you. And as most listeners recall, in episode 32, I said that I read Salt Slow in one sitting underneath my beach umbrella on the beach. And then I proceeded to tell everyone how wonderful it was. I mean, that cover alone I need on a t-shirt. The next day, I reach out to the folks at Flatiron, Caroline Bleek. I said, pretty please, although I think I was a little more frantic than that. Julia was enough to oblige that day and today, because here we are talking about Our Wives Under the Sea. This book is stunning. It's heartbreaking. It's revelatory. It's frightening. I would never go on a mission of the kind that Leah undertakes. And there's so many ands to what this book is. It's told in the most compelling of alternating chapters between Leah and Miri. And all this is wrapped around Julia Armfield's prose, which is, I don't have the words for how gorgeous it is. I'm not the only one that feels that way. Our Wives Under the Sea received a rave review from Ron Charles in the Washington Post. He says it's shocking, achingly poetic, sharp, and beautiful as coral polyps. Armfield exercises an exquisite, even sadistic sense of suspense. She's cleverly designed this story so that we only gradually become aware of how little we know. Unbelievable. And then Chris, author Kristen Arnett says, without a doubt, Our Wives Under the Sea is one of the best books I've ever read. It's not only art, it's a perfect miracle, and we are lucky for it. Now, folks, that's Kristen Arnett. She's the author of With Teeth and Mostly Dead Things. And the rest of Twitter is on fire with their love for this book. So before I completely lose composure, which I've already done, and I won't say too much, Julia, if you would please tell listeners about Our Wives Under the Sea.
Yes, of course. Our Wives Under the Sea is a novel that I wrote predominantly in lockdown, actually, when I think about it, which wasn't necessarily conscious, but I think definitely inspired or informed some of the themes of the novel. But Our Wives Under the Sea is a novel about Leah and Miri, who are a couple who have lived together and are married and have lived together for quite a long time. And Leah, who is a marine biologist, has gone to a very, very deep dive in a submarine on essentially what is supposed to be a routine research trip, which was meant to last 3 weeks and has accidentally ended up lasting 6 weeks. And the novel basically moves into narratives. So in one of the narratives, we are with Leah at the bottom of the sea trying to figure out what has gone wrong. And then the other narrative, we're with Miri in her flat, where things are entirely normal and where Leah has come back, except they're not normal because something is very clearly wrong with Leah. So it's basically two narratives about a mystery and about a relationship and about grief and grieving and about, I hope, kind of the way it can be to grieve someone who is still here.
And that's, pardon the pun, that only scratches the surface of all of the themes and everything else that's going on here. When we last spoke, you did tell us you were working on a full-length novel at the time. And honestly, I couldn't have been more embarrassing when you said that. But I was so happy to hear the news. So Mike, I guess my question is, what was the inspiration for Our Wives Under the Sea? And was it something that was originally a short story that was going to be in Salt Slow?
Yes, it was definitely a short story. I think basically what happened, so when you and I spoke, when Salt Slow came out, and I was like, oh yes, I'm working on a novel. That is very much not the novel that ended up coming out. What happened was that I wrote a different novel, having never written a novel before. I kind of submitted it eventually, and they were like, that's cute. And ended up writing an entirely different novel after that. I think the thing with Our Wives was that it had originally been a short story that I was going to write essentially to congratulate myself for finishing a novel. And it turned out very much having to be the thing that I sort of went and looked at and went, oh, there are different strands to this. There is depth to this, again, to pun, that I think I can draw more things out of. And it was very interesting adapting it from a short story to a novel, because I think when you're writing a short story, I don't think there are any particular pressures on you that there aren't in a novel necessarily, but there is an impetus to kind of push things and experiment in slightly different ways. And one thing I find with a novel that is really different from a short story is that there is pressure to make your characters, if not likable, then certainly bearable. And you end up building much more empathy just because you've spent more time with the characters. And so I think that that was really the core thing about Our Wives for us, was the fact that it became so much about this relationship. And this relationship was something I started to care about because I was spending so much more time with it. And so, whereas if it had stayed a short story, I think it would have been more about the mystery and more about the strangeness. It became more about the reality and the dailiness, actually, by virtue of being a novel.
Did that come organically as you're writing? You said, gee, I want to sort of explore this relationship more. Or did the editor or somebody in the background in your life say, you know, there's something more here, we should kind of push this through?
I think it came quite organically because, like I said, because I was spending so much more time with the characters, I became more interested in their relationship. And I also realized that I had to make the reader interested in their relationship. And something which wouldn't have been the case had it been a short story was that the tool of essentially writing in two voices mm-hmm. became a thing. And so, because I'm writing in the novel as Miri and I'm writing in the novel as Leah, and they're both first person, I'm sort of pinging back and forwards. And the novel became much more like a conversation between two people because of the way that it was structured, and they sort of informed each other and they informed the pace and all of that. And so I think that a lot of it was really more dictated by the structure than anything else. And it all kind of happened quite organically because of that.
And speaking of structure, we'll get to that in a minute, but because I really do want to avoid spoilers about the book. But, you know, as you said, Leah, she goes on this expedition to the deep sea, like the very, very deep sea, the Hattle uh-huh. Zone, which is 20,000 to 36,000 feet deep. At one point, there's a line about 7 miles of water on top of them. And
yeah, it's not good.
I had to stand up, walk outside, take a breath. Like, I never really get claustrophobic, but that made me feel, and that was just on the page, Julia. What?
I know. Imagine if you were James Cameron, the director who's been down there in his little submersible craft. Imagine that. That's just worse.
No, that's not something. And it's cold down there. The whole notion is terrifying. But mm-hmm. what you do is, like I just said, you're taking readers. You took me right down to those depths, not just literally, but figuratively, as you said, especially within the depths of the relationships and marriage and the loss of one you love, which when you lose someone, you can almost feel like you're down 35,000 feet. I mean, it's that feeling of being submerged like that. And we're exploring the depths of Leah and Miri's marriage while they're dealing with this devastating work accident. The whole construct, from the alternating chapters to the chapter names and the suspense you build, because we really want to know what happened. Ron Charles says, we don't know what we don't know. And boy, when we were like, gee, we want to know a little more, you certainly give it to us. What part of the writing process did those chapter names arrive for you? Was that something like, oh, ha-ha, I found this, I'm going to throw that in?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it was very much, I very seldom get like sort of aha moments. Usually writing is like hacking my way through something for me. But I think in this particular situation, it was because I didn't do a heavy amount of research, because I'm not really, I don't do sort of, and I respect it enormously, but I don't do kind of like high sci-fi or anything. I'm not that interested in how the spaceship works. You know what I mean? I just need things to be believable and conceivable. But in terms of kind of, I had to do some research about the ocean and basic biological facts, and the fact that it was always in all of the things that I did, it's split in kind of different words and different terms depending, but the five zones of the ocean just felt so perfect, especially because it's a narrative which to some degrees I think is working in two directions actually, because there's sort of one narrative that's going down and one narrative that's kind of going up at the same time, because it's about people moving away from each other and coming back to each other. And so it just kind of felt perfect to structure it in terms of depth. And yeah, it was a very, very lucky realization that that already existed and I could just piggyback on it.
Oh my, and I remember getting the galley and reading them, these chapter titles, these or parts, I guess, going online and saying, what is that? And then I thought, oh gosh, what is she doing to us?
That's what I want. Always just people going, no, why?
And then, of course, the title, Our Wives Under the Sea. Was this the original title?
Oh, yeah. No, the original title was Our Wives Under the Sea, and it was not necessarily going to be allowed. And I think I can understand that, because I think that it's not necessarily initially, it doesn't conjure an image. Mm-hmm. Like immediately necessarily. And I think so much of the title is helped by how amazing both of the covers are, because I think they're both so evocative and I've been so lucky with that. But because in this is without really doing any spoilers, but Our Wives Under the Sea in the novel is a reference to a dream one of the character has about something which calls itself the Church of the Blessed Sacrament of Our Wives Under the Sea, because it is a novel about religion to a certain extent. It's a novel about kind of waning Catholicism and faith and grief within that structure. And so it was always the title that I wanted, but at various points, I think it was going to be called Things Come Down This Far. I think it was going to be called Sea Lung. And I think there's always that thing when you kind of come to, you sort of acquiesce to a new title and you go, okay, this is fine. And then you actually get the one you wanted. And it's like, yeah, that was always the one I wanted.
And where does this inspiration come from for the story in general?
When it was a short story, I was thinking quite a lot about, there's a Lauren Groff novel called The Monsters of Templeton, where she, I read it such a long time ago, I got the book in the really big, in Powell's bookshop in Portland when I was there, which is very cool. It's a novel basically about a woman returning to her childhood town and kind of coming to terms with some things that she needs to while she's there, whilst at the same time there is essentially a monster that has been dredged up in a big lake. And it really speaks to something that I have always been so interested in, which is the sort of juxtaposition of genre and like heavy realism and the way those two things can clash and kind of grease each other's wheels, I think, because I'm so interested in kind of boring dailiness and realism and the way that people subsume things into their routines quite quickly. And so when I was writing Our Wives, I was super interested in just like talking about a relationship and the falling apart of a relationship and the dailiness of a relationship, but also the way that people react to extraordinary things and the way people would react to an extraordinary occurrence. Because I think that people don't go on being shocked by things. People actually do generally make an accommodation. And that's one of the main things I'm so interested in always in writing, which is the reason that I think I'm always writing genre.
Which I think is true to form for Salt Slow, especially. And I think that it's hard to qualify you because it doesn't fit in any one genre, which is why for me, it hits that sweet spot. Mm. And it's just, you just nail it. Really brilliantly. And you talked, you talked about the two covers. I received the galley from, as I said, the wonderful people at Flatiron. And at that point, the book cover hadn't been chosen. So I get this, I'm holding it up. Listeners can't see it, but I get this sort of lovely Flatiron.
This bright white item.
Yeah, it is really something, which is, we'll talk about a contrast. So I get that. I read it and I'm thinking it was so evocative. I couldn't even imagine what the cover would be. Then I see the UK cover and my mind was like, oh my gosh, and then I saw that you were going to be at an engagement in Scotland and they had books. And I said, well, I'm just going to support that local bookstore and order that. And then I see the US cover. They're extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing I love about both of them in completely different ways is I think that they're both so threatening. Like, because, do you know what I mean? Because the UK one is so obviously like, it has that horror vibe. It's basically, for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's basically a picture of a woman and the sort of patina on the mirror in front of her. It kind of gives the impression that her face is melting. Whereas the US cover is this this sort of very pink sky over a rather choppy ocean. And something about both of those, the pink sky is so threatening somehow. Whereas obviously, you know, if your face melts, that wouldn't be great either. So in either direction, horrifying, but I simply love them. They're so good.
Unbelievable. They're both beautiful. They're both on shelves in each country. And It's just, they're just amazing. So the book came out in the UK in March, I think?
Yes, it was the very end of March, I think. Or the beginning of March. God, I can't remember, but it was in March.
And so you got on the book promotion train for that. And then you have to you're doing it again now for the US version, which the book came out last week. It's amazing. All of this love. I mean, that Ron Charles interview, I keep going back to that because I'm such a fan of his.
So it was such a generous, lovely review, which I really wasn't expecting. And then turned up, I was working because I have a full-time job and I was working a night and somebody had like texted it to me and I was trying to be professional whilst reading this beautiful review, being like, well, that's my credibility shot for tonight. But it was so nice. It was so nice.
I mean, take the victory lap. I mean, and it's truly, two of my favorite, your name and Ron, right? So Julia Armfield meets Ron Charles and that mashup was just, you know, I'm waving it around at the library and people are like, Carolyn, please, all right already.
Never chill out, please. I need this.
It couldn't be more effusive on my end, as listeners have come to discover over the many episodes here. So where can readers find you for any upcoming events? I'm assuming you have a whole bunch listed.
Yes.
Where can readers find you? Website or social media? What's the best place?
The best place is definitely find me on social media because I'll be posting everything that I'm doing. I've got a US event. It's a Zoom event, but I've got a US event on the 21st in the evening, I think. Oh no, it'll be in the afternoon for America. It's at 1 o'clock. And I'm doing it. It'll be like 7:15 or something for me. And it's with an independent bookstore and Keelan Hughes, and it will be really great. But I will post about that. And apart from that, I'll be around. At some point I'll be able to be in America as a person again. But yeah, it's all going on. It's all nice.
Now, anything you can share about what you might be working on next?
I am working on another novel, shockingly enough. Everybody who has ever met me kind of had to listen to me going, the second this is done, I'm going back to short stories. And now I think I like novels. So I am working on a different style of novel. I think this one, now I think about it, was, whilst it wasn't about lockdown and isolation, it was very informed by lockdown and isolation. And I think the new one is very informed by being allowed out again and kind of different kind of anxieties and different kinds of fears. And it's bigger and there are more characters. And we'll see if I can do it. So maybe in like 3 years, we'll be doing this podcast again. Like, well, you really messed that up, didn't you? But we'll see.
Well, I don't care. 5 years, 3 years, 2 years. I mean, I almost said just alone, let me get her back on for that Literary Hub essay that you wrote, which was so beautiful.
Thank you.
And I'll put the link in the podcast page for that essay that you wrote. It's stunning. It's just terrific. Before I let you go, any recommendations you can share with listeners?
The books that I have really loved this year, Devil House by John Donnell, which I think is just absolutely beautiful. Matrix by Lauren Groff, in some ways, probably still the best thing I've read this year. And it was the first thing I read this year. I hate it when that happens. I am reading X by Davy Davis at the moment, which is just absolutely fascinating and like nothing else I've ever read. So yeah, those would be my recommendations. And it's not a novel, but I finally read Into Thin Air by John Krakauer. And that's what I've been going on about a lot this year. It's so good. I need to write a book up a mountain.
I was just going to say that's right up your alley.
Our wives up Everest.
I'm here for that.
Thank you. Perfect.
I am here for that. Oh my gosh. I know, listeners, this was a interesting interview because I really will not spoil much about what's going on in this book. So even though I have a zillion questions, we'll leave that for another time. I will put all of the links to Julia's book recommendations and where you can find her on social media on the podcast page for this episode. Today's book, Our Wives Under the Sea, by today's guest, Julia Armfield is on shelves everywhere in the UK, certainly everywhere in the United States. So please grab a copy at your local library or your local independent bookstore. Our Wives Under the Sea is published by the wonderful Flatiron Press, which is an imprint of Macmillan. Julia Armfield, thank you so much for joining me and the listeners today on Merrick Library's Top Shelf Podcast. I am so grateful, and I really hope you'll come back and join me for whatever's next.
I definitely will.
Oh my gosh. Listeners, I thank all of you for joining me today. Remember to follow Top Shelf at Merrick Library on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you find most podcasts. For the latest and the greatest at the Merrick Library, check out our website at merricklibrary.org. Special thanks, as always, to Merrick Library Director Dan Chusmere, Assistant Director Diane Bondi, and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and on to the airwaves. Until the next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.